Narcissism is a huge problem and a source of abuse in society today. Narcissists seem to prey on highly sensitive and empathic people. And I would also say that the narcissist preys on deeply compassionate, healthy, and successful people. And in fact, there are many ways that possibly anyone could be vulnerable to narcissistic abuse. In this episode, my very special guest and I discuss different ways that anyone possibly could be vulnerable to narcissistic abuse and the way that you can actually discern your own vulnerabilities and how to stay free of these abusive relationships through the wisdom of your human design. So stay tuned for this conscious conversation with my amazing guest, author, podcaster, and spiritual mentor, Raven Scott, and be sure to have your human design chart handy. Hey there, my friend. It's Trisha Carr. Real quick before we head into this episode, I just want to make sure that you know about Modern Mystic Life, a subscription service for spiritual mentoring and education. The monthly subscription is only $11.11 per month. We have regular support and inspiration delivered with the utmost ease right into your text messenger 2 to 4 times per week. You can use your mobile device or your desktop messenger to access the lessons and meditations, a monthly MP3 download of a produced meditation, at least once per month live meditation led by me. There is no account login, and we have a monthly live class workshop. These are usually $35 for non-subscribers, so it is quite a deal. And the community is amazing. This is a way for you to support the Charmed Life podcast and also a way for us to be able to work more closely together. So do check out how you can subscribe in the show notes. I hope to see you there. Hello and welcome to the Charmed Life podcast. This podcast is all about magic, metaphysics, mysticism, and the unconditional love of the universe. And I am your host. My name is Trisha Carr. Welcome, welcome. This is Trisha, and I am a 5-1 reflector, and a huge part of my journey of recovering from, you know, all kinds of conditioning. But yes, I have had repeated relationships of narcissistic abuse, knock wood. Don't have any other ones that are going to really stick around. And I am very excited to dive into this topic because this very topic of how to discern your potential vulnerabilities to narcissistic abuse by your human design has been something I have been contemplating and meditating for the last year in deep detail. So welcome to the show, my very special guest, the author of incredible books, which we're going to talk about, and a really valuable and prolific podcast, Raven Scott. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I want to talk up front about your incredible book because those who are here, and welcome, welcome. By the way, we are live streaming this, so you may be listening to it on the podcast. We also live stream the podcast, so Raven and I are here live and direct. So those of you who are here live, I would love for you to drop a comment, tell us where you're, you know, watching from. And if you have any questions or comments that you would like to make, we would love to, you know, hear what you have to say about this topic and what possibly would have happened to you. Any questions that you have? Is that cool with you, Raven? Like we look at what people are. Yeah, good, good.
Because I'm a generator. I'd love to respond. So please comment.
Absolutely, that's right. Let's let's create some response for Raven. So can we please, before we dive into this topic that I'm, again, so excited to hear the ways that you'll help us to understand our vulnerabilities in our through our human design to this narcissistic issue that we have in society. And you have a wonderful book that is, you have two, and your newest one is The Empath's Guide to Rising Strong. Would you like to share that, some information about that for us?
Yeah. It's my newest book, baby. It really takes my favorite exercises from the first book, and I've created like an in-depth workbook, and there's 4 parts to it. I've added the story of goddess Inanna, the ancient Mesopotamian goddess, to help us walk through the underworld and back out, just like how it feels being with a narcissist, and helping us with our shadow work to cleanse out all of that. And then part 2 is all about moon rituals. It's a big part of my work is releasing all of the pain that you can't get closure with from the narcissist through moon, through the moon rituals and burning and transmuting. So for every zodiac and wherever the moon is in each zodiac, I have a ritual for you in there. And then I have guided meditations in the second one to help you heal even further. And then a huge section is all about human design, because people would ask me when they got their free chart, like, how do I learn more? How do I dive deeper on my own? And I kept going, well, you could buy this book, you could buy that book. And I'm like, why don't I just put it all together in my own book?
Totally.
So that's what I, from my own viewpoint of what human design is and what does it mean to be a projector? What does it mean to have split definitions or your inner authority? All these things are really confusing. It's like alien language. So I tried to ground it and make it simple.
Yes. And so for the audience, in case, I mean, a lot of people who are watching or listening, they've been hearing me talk about it for a while, so they probably have some foundation. But just in case we have people who are stumbling across it for the first time, we'll do that little boilerplate. Human design is a synthesis of four ancient spiritual technologies, or you might say observational sciences, and one modern science. So the modern science is quantum physics, and then we have astrology, the chakra system, the I Ching, and the Kabbalah Tree of Life specifically. And what it does is by your natal birth time and place and everything, we'll pull through a chart. It's really, isn't it like your user manual for your body and your personality? It is like, it comes from two specific imprints of your development. That's approximately three months before you're born. And then that moment of birth.
And 88 days.
Yeah, 88 degrees of the sun. Exactly. Yeah. And it creates this, which when you first look at it, you're like, I have no idea what to do with that. Because it's a chart.
It looks like alien language.
And when I first, because I'm a reflector, when I first learned, someone was in my studio. She had just taken a class that I was like giving in person. So it was before the pandemic, clearly. Mm-hmm. And she got my chart and she goes, oh, you're a reflector. And I was like, okay, I don't know what that means. And she,
I'm so excited to be here with you. You're so rare.
That's nice. That's a nice perspective. But for a lot of reflectors who first hear it, that sounds like you're weird, you're odd, and nobody gets you. And that's right. Why, yes, all of your fears are real because of our conditioning that we're listening to, you know, how we hear the rarity, you know. I mean, she's, yeah. All of your centers are open. That means she'd already been talking to my other friend who was here about her, you know, chart. And she's, so that means you have no definition and you have no consistent way of being or whatever thing she was saying. I was like, so I'm not a person?
Exactly. It's so confusing the way it's worded. It's like, so I don't have this energy. So I don't have.
Like, yeah. Well,
yeah. So, but it's not that.
It really does for any. And by the way, do you like Karen Curry Parker? She really brings some great wisdom, yes. I think. And
she's
says,
my biggest mentors.
Oh, really? Oh, good. Is that where you got a lot of your training from, Karen, or?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I love to attribute when I'm going to quote someone. She says, you are a once in a lifetime cosmic event. And so everyone is rare and special and unique. And the human design body graph helps us to understand that. So anyway, just a little bit about the basis of human design. You can get your free chart anyway. Just Google free human design chart. Jovian Archive is, you know, the main resource for it. And there's many others.
Yeah.
So having laid that foundation, where shall we start, Raven? What are some things that you can share with us about this empath and narcissistic trauma bond? And do you want to start with, like, what is an empath and who is an empath? And what are the capacities of being an empath, since that's a huge part of your work?
Yeah, that is a big part of my work. I think the empath, what I find is in those open centers, and it can be a combination of those, but it tends to be people typically with a pattern of having that open solar plexus where you're absorbing that emotion, an open will center where you're absorbing the agenda, and the open root center where you're like having to do all the things to prove your self-worth. Mm-hmm. Your nervous system is off kilter. In essence, it is a person who just takes on the weight of the world, you know, like soaks in all that information, is highly sensitive. And I think it's important to be trained to know that you are in order to grow in your strength for your boundaries, because that's where we get into trouble with these narcissists who prey on us. And you can be highly successful. You don't have to be like always sobbing at the time. You can be highly sensitive and successful.
Yeah.
And these certain people, they see your light. They see that you have deep compassion for them. So essentially, if you don't have those boundaries, then you'll let them get away with whatever they want because you continue to have this deep sense of like, oh, well, I can see their inner child. I know how they're feeling. I see their trauma, right? And so then we write all these excuses and they're like, cool, my work is done. I don't have to write any excuses and manipulate and gaslight you at the beginning, you know, because you see me. And they need that as well. They are seeking a healer.
They are. And they are broken. That's true. I mean, the
narcissists are broken.
The narcissist, the hurt people phrase, and the narcissism is something, a strategy or a set of strategies that is used in response to, you know, the trauma that they experienced. It's like, I think 100% of the time. And of course, we all have some set or form of trauma, no matter how perfect, you know, someone's family life may have been. Just trauma is simply when an entity, particularly, it's pretty easy for a child to receive a sensory input that is too much to process in that moment. And therefore, it gets crystallized in the nervous system and in the body and in the psyche. And that's trauma. Narcissists have that as well. And this is how, and by the way, narcissism is a spectrum. There are many different brands. We aren't therapists who can really diagnose people. We're talking about our personal experiences and identifying these certain kinds of skills that were used to us, right? In certain relationships. I feel like that's something.
And we can call them toxic people. We can call them broken people. But essentially, the ultimate thing is that they have this hurt. They're seeking that light. You are the light. You have the compassion. Yet they're not introspecting or taking responsibility as they should, that we are always constantly. Typically, the empath is constantly introspecting, reevaluating. Yeah. Did I do this wrong? What's happening? Like, what's in the situation? And that's our superpower. But at the same time, with people who don't take responsibility, it can be used as a weapon against us.
Weapons, I'm saying skills and strategies to try to soften it, but weapon is an appropriate word for it.
I mean, with true NPD, it truly is.
Yeah, right,
they
exactly.
are very cunning. Yes.
She's referring to narcissistic personality disorder. This is a proper disorder that is in the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. And then there is, again, a spectrum of someone being narcissistic and using narcissistic tools and cycles. And maybe they don't fall into the diagnosable place of it. But I got to say, too, that I graduated from mind-body psychology degree, and it's the program, it's the second year at HMI College of Hypnotherapy, and the program is all taught by both working therapists as well, and they're also, you know, professors, they're also instructors. There wasn't a lot of narcissism, there was a little bit, but it's because they don't have a lot of experience treating narcissists. They rarely wind up in therapy. Because it's
very
hard to
rare
hit rock
for
bottom.
Them to end up in therapy.
Yeah. It's hard to hit rock bottom the way that society is right now. It kind of has that big narcissistic, you know, the conditioning that we have, you know, of the not self-conditioning, we would say in human design as a collective. It really leans to narcissism. So I would love to hear what some of the things are that you found in the human design model of the vulnerabilities. You mentioned opened or undefined centers. What are some other things?
Yes. What I'm finding is, of course, the open centers are the easiest and for me, the most conditioned area that the narcissist get to you. So again, if you're always walking on eggshells, feeling like you're responsible for their emotions, that is an unconscious way of living through your open solar plexus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you have to become aware of that and go, okay, this is not my circus, not my monkey. Like this, this is not something that I started. You brought this energy in, you're mad at me and you're projecting onto me. And now I'm starting to absorb it. Like it really is mine. And that this is my emotion. And also that I'm at fault. Hmm. So sometimes there's a combination, right? That at fault, like, oh, it's my fault. That starts to be the open will center. I'm actually buying into that sales pitch. Mm-hmm. And that BS, like, ooh, I'm starting to believe that it was my fault when I was just sitting here minding my own business, doing whatever I was doing, and they've walked in and they've, you know, threatened me or assaulted me or proclaimed that I did something to them that I didn't.
And then there's the covert narcissist who will invoke a guilt by being very weak and very broken and very hurt. To one of the part of that strategy might be like, you know, oh, I'm so broken and hurt, and you've hurt me because you, you know, you set a boundary with me. That's not what they would yes. say. You set a boundary with me and it's hurt me. And then you go, okay, oh, you know what? I'm sorry. And they go, well, thank you. Thank you for being sorry. You know, like, wait, no. I said I'm sorry as a high road thing. I was trying to take the high road so we could come to a place.
I literally just had a conversation like this. I was like, so my responsibility in this vicious cycle is this. Mm-hmm. What's yours? And it was a, and then they diverted the conversation to something totally like, they didn't answer it, but they got out of the answer with their, you know, word charm and talking about this and how
trans logic. Yeah. Trans logic.
Like, those mm-hmm. I feel statements and stuff don't work with the covert narcissist. They just don't take responsibility. I'm like, oh, that's great. You feel that, but I feel this. And it's not like a, I feel let's move forward. It's a, I feel this, I'm the victim. And they go on and on about how they're the victim.
And covert narcissism, just to put a finer point on it for some people, it's also called the vulnerable narcissist. So it really puts up a smokescreen about how could this person possibly be narcissistic? They're so vulnerable. They're so hurt.
Or they're perfect out in the world.
Yeah, that's right. And
perfect citizen.
You know what? I was listening to some of your podcasts and videos, and I guess it didn't really dawn on me because it's my one of the main things that has been used by three very clear narcissistic relationships, you know, that polarity, that they compel or manipulate the sensitive or the empath, you know, the person who is the polar there, to do all of the work. And so that they opt out and I don't really love the word lazy, but that's the best way.
Or they're entitled, right? Mine, when I was in that relationship, was entitled. Everything was given to him. Even his job was not even through an actual stranger as an employee. It was family. Like everything was given. Money was just washed through. And I was like, really? I was the only one who had a real job.
Yeah.
But it was always like the expectation is set. And it's almost like we subconsciously as empaths also take on, I'm a 6'2", so I'm already, you know, the role model is already taking on the weight of the world. And I'm like, well, I am also going to take on the responsibility of everything else. So I cooked, I cleaned, I did the laundry, I made sure the house was tidy, and I worked a full-time job, and I exercised, and I made sure I didn't gain too much weight.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these things that were expected out of these different conversations, like, even I would make sure to go get my nails done. Like he would say, you know, real woman or classy woman. I forget what adjective he used.
I'm already disgusted. I don't care which one it is. I'm already disgusted.
Either way, that real woman, right? And he would use his mom as example. And I would always look up to her, like always have their nails manicured, never chipped. It's highly offensive. And you're a horrible human being if your nails are chipped. And I'm like, okay, I'll make sure my nails aren't chipped. Like it was just this weird, like, I don't want to be disgusting and a horrible human being to you. So I'll make sure my nails are always looking good.
And then I imagine and then you can make it your own because you're like, you know what? I actually do like having my nails done. So it's nice. You know, like you start to own it.
You start to justify it. And you start to you twist your own brain around. You start to gaslight your own self. You're like, this totally is what I want to do on my day off is sit here and get my nails done, which I could be doing other things.
Oh my gosh. So the way that happened to me where I was doing all of the work and two of the ones that were in my adult life, because I had there was a head of household in my childhood that was narcissistic, definitely NPD, you know, definitely. I mean, of course I'm not a therapist, but this person is passed now. So, you know, whatever, it's my story as well as someone else's. But the point is the ones in my adult life, both of these people would say, well, because you're so good at it, you're better at that than I am. And meanwhile, task by task by task in these partnerships were relegated to my side, to where there was nothing being done, but it had to be done because survival. One was a business relationship. One was a life partner kind of situation. And the business relationship, we had made promises to customers and everything. So it had to be done. And it was just like not done if I didn't do it. And you're in a cycle. And even when I realized, and the first thing I realized was like, I'm being codependent. is
right.
It still takes time to pack up and get out. And we will be right back. Hello, Charmed Life listener. It's Trisha, and I am making a special invitation for you to Sacred Sphere. This is a bi-monthly communal learning, practice, and resonance space. It is your community for intuition, manifestation, and spiritual development. It's happening twice per month, and there are special benefits if you subscribe so that you can go to every one of these or see the replays. It is a place for your deep, immersive healing and your powerful manifestation practice to unfold in your life. I'm so excited about this. The vision for this is large and wonderful. We're going to be changing our own lives, and I believe we're going to be changing the world. So check it out. The link is in the description. We can't wait to work with you, to see you, to love you there. And now back to the show.
When there's so many things attached, there's so many cords, there's so many obligations, you know, there's all these different things and intertwined, it is really hard to detach all that. And when you start to draw a boundary or say like, hey, like take the weight of the work, like I can't be doing all of this work, they'll make an excuse. So they'll start to put it back on you and they'll always find a way to get out of it. So then you're like, well, it's a waste of energy to even have a conversation. So then you just go on and you do it, which is also not healthy, but you're stuck.
or you'll get an abusive, you know, conversation. Like you will find yourself, if you even try to set a boundary or request something, then you get torn down somehow. And whether directly or passive aggressively, it does end up feeling like it's too painful to do it than to just do the work, and it becomes impossible. And I want to highlight what you said, that successful people and healthy people, because this actually came up in a conversation that I had with someone about 2 weeks ago. I walked through this job opportunity, a little bit of a gig that was part-time, and I walked right out of it because I was like, ooh, narcissism flying around here at the top of this company. And but all of the coworkers were lovely people, beautiful people. I was only there 5 weeks. Six people in one department quit. And that was a person who'd been there 6 years, one person 3 years, one person 2 months. Like they all, and I was like, you know what? I was already smelling it like on day one. So I'm going to exit. So one person who had been there for 6 years, and we kind of made fast friends like the moment that we met. And again, and she happened to say, like, there's such beautiful people that work there. They're like lifelong relationships, but there's so much abuse from the top. And then she was talking about, I don't know why I left and went back a couple of times, and what lessons was I? And I was like, listen, predators prey on healthy prey. You know, the lion wants to get the healthiest gazelle. That's just the nature of predatorial, you know, feeding. And so, it's not, but that is something in a video that you were just talking about, where you had a guest who was leaning a little bit more to the, I guess, blaming the victim, saying, no, it's not really abuse.
And oh, yes.
Yes.
I actually made a second follow-up and I was like,
that's what I listened to. I know.
Did you? Oh, that's the one you listened to.
I didn't want to listen to the original one, because I liked your follow-up too much.
Okay. Yeah. And sorry if I sabotaged it for that guest, but I was like, I just have to speak up. And unfortunately, this is what happens when we're impasse and we're conditioned and trained to not speak up, is that you freeze in those moments. And I'm like, did she really just say that? Like my whole audience now is like feeling alienated. Like we experienced abuse, and she was only saying like, if you're kidnapped and you're like locked up, that's abuse. Everything else is not abuse. And I was like, what did she just say?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really difficult. You can't blame the victims, and it's a very insidious abuse that truly is abuse. And they're working to have coercive abuse actually be something in the courts to be able to be recognized.
And you know, I didn't listen to the original episode, and I wonder if this person is in a part of their journey of healing from some abuse, feeling like, I want to be empowered, and so I don't want to only identify as a victim. I get that, but
in the same interview, which was really interesting with her, is that her parents were narcissistic, and she's like, I excuse everyone else, they're all lovely, but not my parents, because they're ultimately responsible. And I was like, well, I do agree with that. So like, she was very contradictory about what she was saying. And but I love that too, because there is an and. That's a complexity about being a human being, is that, you know, these things are not acceptable. And they are victims, right? Narcissists should not treat people that way.
Right.
And they are abused. And yes, to the answer the comment in here is, yes, they constantly are, narcissistic people are victims. They yes. play the victim and they don't empower themselves or grow to get out of being a victim. And they use that victim, you know, I guess, playing card to get out of whatever responsibility we're trying to level them up into and to grow. They don't want to grow. It's too scary. It's too painful. They're too lazy. Whatever their motivation is, they always play the victim.
And this is a comment from Debbie, who's here. Hello, Debbie, that says, it seems most narcissistic people have a victim mentality and nothing is ever their fault. Yes, this is correct, Debbie. We completely agree. And like I mentioned earlier, one of the narcissistic relationships that I had, when we would have a disagreement, aka when this person would lash out at me.
Aka you're trying to share with them that they hurt you.
Yeah, or I'm not going to do all of the things that, you know, yes. whatever it is.
You said no.
And I would go and do my inner work and I would be like, okay, when there's a disagreement, let's both find a way to take responsibility. And I would say, I'm sorry that I reacted. Because also I probably did like react, you know what I mean? I got defensive and I got in fight flight. And then this person
They're
would
good
say
at getting us into that mode.
Yeah.
Too.
And this person would say, well, thank you for that. Never doing their part and this same relationship, this person it was a business relationship, grossly mishandled the business for over a year and put me in spontaneously. This is what actually, I'm not going to say anything more. You know, a big surprise, not the kind that reflectors like, that, oh, guess what? This money has been mishandled and it's all on your plate. And this person, and I was like, I can't believe, oh my God, wow. You know what I mean? And by bringing any of my response to this very difficult situation, this person said, I think that you're not taking your responsibility in this. My responsibility of you mishandling our business funds? Well, you could have asked. Yeah. I could have asked if you were mishandling our business funds.
I'm like, how would that be a thought that would come into your head to ask that?
Just to, like, again, the nuances yes. of not taking responsibility that can happen. And we have...
They'll say anything to get out of it.
Totally. Tiffany says, mother-in-law is narcissistic, and I just found out she's a projector. Oh, Tiffany's also a projector. I know Tiffany. And at first, I was like, kind of offended. Poor thing. I get it. I know. But right. now I'm looking at things.
Projectors are not.
Yeah, looking at things through the HD lens. I know, because I've looked at that too. It is not relegated to any particular part. Like they're a generator. I've heard people say, oh, 1-3 profiles have a 10 CB narcissistic. I'm like, no, we can't say that. No, we definitely can't say that. No.
I think every single type can be prone to it. We all have our shadows. And I think the narcissist was born with this beautiful design that we all were and then socially conditioned to be stuck in their shadow. Like every gate, I don't know if you're into the gene keys, but
absolutely.
Every gate.
I've got 19 in three places too. So that, and the shadow of 19 is codependency.
There you go. So, but if you're aware, then you can work on it and you can learn and like live through the lesson of it.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is a narcissist is stuck in their shadow, and you can have a narcissist any type.
Absolutely.
Narcissist any profile.
What about the splits? Because my husband's single definition, and I have noticed through our relationship that he's, in my estimate, pretty invulnerable. Like he isn't very vulnerable to narcissistic relationships, at least one-on-one, maybe by society and everything, and, you know, because it's just in a way we could call that conditioning. But he seems to be really neutral in both codependency and narcissism, whether he, you know, in himself and in the relationships that show up. And he has single definition. And so I think maybe the split definition.
And what's his inner authority?
He's a projector. So his authority is emotional. So yeah. And so he has that emotional fortitude as well for himself.
Yeah.
Really his open centers are only a sacral, throat, ajna, and head. So those are some other reasons why. However, what about split definitions? Would you call that a vulnerability to narcissistic pairing? You know, because
I think yes, I truly do think so. Depending again on how much you're investing in your mental health and your growth. So split definition is you only have one group talking to each other. So even though he has the emotional, he has to go through one cycle and he's got it. He mm-hmm. knows his intuition and he, mm-hmm. it's quick. For the ones who have split, you take, you know, you have a little bit more time. You have two groups talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And then you can use me as an example. I have triple split.
Okay.
So I have three voices in my head going, oh, but what about this? Or what if this? Oh, but he's so kind. Or, oh, remember when he did this? So, oh, you know, he was really hurt as a child. Mm-hmm. And so there's too many voices, too much time. And then the narcissist just overrides that narrative. And you're like, forget it, right? If you're not within your own power, then you're not going to have your own voice.
Right. They say, and I have no entities inside me. So they say it's like having two entities or three entities inside you. You're saying voices. That's what I've heard. That's what it feels like for split definitions of various types. And there's quad split, there's triple quad, and just split, meaning like you just have the two. Or there's single definition, which I think that I like the way you said it. My husband goes through one cycle and he's got it. And then he has a lot of good definition in areas that, I mean, he's conditioned by that sacral to work too much, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's about it. He just has to be very careful about where he puts his energy and not to feel like he can shoot off to the moon and back in one day.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's so funny. That's literally the conversation we had this morning. He's like, I had a breakthrough. I shouldn't try to just do a whole creative cycle in one day just for the sake of doing it in one day. And you just said the moon one day.
The moon and back.
So intuitive of you.
My daughter is a projector, and she's getting into her double digits. It's really interesting to watch. It's definitely an experiment when you have human design to start watching the people in your life going, oh, wow.
Yeah. I had something that dawned on me today because I'm 5'1", and I love bombing, I think, is very insidious for a 5 line because we're accustomed to getting projections. The 5 line is the one that receives projections, and we're accustomed to getting projections. Right. And that's how I think, especially love bombing, when I was beginning to recover from narcissistic abuse, I was like, I don't remember being love bombed, really, because I don't remember taking it in. But maybe that's because I'm accustomed to not taking in projections deeply, but it's still like, and so I think they come around in other ways. And in both of these adult narcissistic relationships, they promoted me in our relationship to a high position really quickly. Like they said, you're my best friend, or I feel meant to be with you, that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. Mm. You know, while it didn't define me, it convinced me that I had to be partners with this person very quickly. And I wonder,
it's almost like they took your 5 line leadership and used that versus like your need for affirmation and love and other things.
Yeah. I wonder if that's it. So, but have you ever thought about that? Like the 5 line is accustomed to receiving projections, and then love bombing can sneak in there, you know? And 2 lines too. It's sort of with your 2 line, you have your 6'2", which receives projections and also gets called out. I'll bet that that's a vulnerability that you could be experiencing too, right?
It's definitely that. I mean, I've always thought that it was my open root.
For sure.
And this is why, like, sometimes when we're like doing our experiment and our own mind and body, like, we need other bodies to be like asking, like, what do you think about this? Because my open root, I'm always trying to strive to be perfect, to do perfect, to appear worthy.
Yeah.
And I think that was the biggest thing. Like, I wanted to, I don't know, like level up in life and be an important person. And that was really what hooked me into my relationship with the narcissist. Was his family was high status. I felt important to be with him. And I kind of ignored all the other ways that he mistreated me improperly because I wanted that status. So I wonder if that's that, or if it was, my 6 profile wanting to kind of elevate that, you know, that role model. Being aloof also, like he was aloof, and I, as a 6 line profile, that's something that we kind of naturally are because we're at the top of the I Ching. Uh-huh. And so I kind of resonated with that. And I was like, I can't stand all the people in the world either. But at the same time, like I needed friendship and I didn't get that because I was isolated.
Yeah. Isolation. Yeah. That's a good thing to bring up, is that that's a common product of being in a narcissistic partnership, especially because they have the capacity. And that when I say partnership, it doesn't have to be a marriage or a love relationship. It could be something where you're meant to be like in a significant where they can, I would say they can isolate you. If it's your mother-in-law, they may not be able to isolate you as well. Maybe only when you're with that person. But the isolation, to be able to break down all of your other relationships, it's very, I call the one that I had in my 20s from 20 to 27, it was really like being in a cult of just two people, just me and the other, and the leader of the cult. That's what it was.
Yeah, because they control your body. I don't know if you experienced this too, but controlled what you eat, how much you eat. He got to eat a steak dinner. I had to eat salad out. Like, it was all this stuff of just subliminal messaging. And I chose to eat the salad because I didn't want to gain weight, because that was like the fear and the, like, you have to keep looking a certain way and, you know, having a nice tiny figure and all this stuff. It's all surrounded by that. You're right. I was just listening to your amazing episode with the new podcast today. And I was like, oh my God, like, this is mind blowing. The cult. Oh. And I did watch The Twin Flames.
Oh yes. Right. Right. That's just super. And it's amazing because I feel like cult leaders, it's always a narcissist at the top, and they do all of this recruitment so they can do less and just, you know, whenever they feel like it, just rain their abuse down on everyone. And
they take.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And they're elevated in it, and everyone owes them. They owe them all of this. I also had a sleep deprivation in that first one too, because I was compelled, manipulated to have the job, while the other one didn't really have a job, as you mentioned. The job that I was compelled to have had me up at 5 a.m. But I also wasn't, if I tried to go to bed early enough, I don't know how to describe it. It's funny. My current husband, he's like, I don't even know the person that you're talking about. When I'm like, I wasn't allowed to go to bed. He's like, what does that mean? He goes, I don't give you permission for anything. I would never try to.
I love that when we're with partners who can't comprehend our toxic abusive partners.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm the right one now.
Exactly. And I'm like, there would be a fit.
They wanted attention, right? They wanted attention from you. So it'd be something.
It was like, watch this. It was honestly like, for years, it was watch Jerry Springer with him until like 11:30. It was stupid. But if I tried to go to bed, there was a fight. There was a pouch. There was this passive aggressive thing. And it was just like, oh, you know, and again, this relationship started when I was 20. This person was 13 and a half years older than me. This person was a replacement of my mother's husband. So I was groomed. And so again, there's like these degrees of by having a repeated narcissistic pattern, each narcissist was not as bad as the previous one. My way out of it.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good progression. Less is better.
Yeah. So now we're at zero. We're at zero tolerance. So,
so good.
Let's see what Michelle has to say. Michelle says, I dated a man who was a narcissist, but he always was saying how everyone else, his ex-wife, people at work, etc., were narcissistic, but it was really him recognizing himself and others. What do you think
about that?
Isn't
that ironic? Yes. I mean, that's the thing, is they always say there's something wrong with everyone else in their relationships previously. If they're bad talking constantly, then the problem is them normally.
Yeah.
Those people who, you know, you just don't talk bad about other people. And so that's like your green flag. Like, okay, I'm with someone who's not talking bad about my ex. Like, maybe something bad happened, but they're not constantly saying that person is bad.
Mm-hmm. Talk more about green flags. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, I know. I mean, green flags are such good, like a breath of fresh air to look for. Like, look for the non-drama making humans, of course. Look for the non-blaming. Like, there's no blame shifting. Like you said, they're not telling you or giving you permission to do anything in your day. I remember one time, we only have one TV in my previous relationship. So there's one TV, whatever he was watching was watched.
Yep.
I don't even remember being able to sit down and watch whatever I wanted. And I was in, you know, the relationship with my partner now at the beginning. And I'm like, I'm just like, I walked out because we were in separate rooms watching two separate things. And I walked out. I was like, this is amazing. I get to watch my own TV show.
Oh my gosh, I have the same thing. In that one in my 20s, there was one TV, and like I said, I had to watch. I not only could I only watch what he was watching, I had to watch what he was watching. I was required to be there. And yeah, my husband and I on days off, we have our separate rooms and we're watching something. Then we go, hey, do you want to watch this movie together? And we come together and we choose something to be together. That's so funny.
Yeah. Green flags. I mean, they can't comprehend. Like if you are tired and you did wake up early, they're like, okay, you're going to bed. Good night. Mm-hmm. It's not, no, stay with me and guilt you into it. Or you're not a good wife if you're not, you know, giving me this or that in bed at night. It's like, there's no pressure. The green flag is there's just no pressure. They're just like, okay, chill. They're just chill within themselves. They're confident.
Julie here is saying hi from Minnesota, who's a mental projector. Julie, I feel that. I know Julie, but I had when I was working with Julie, I didn't know about human design yet. So, and a mental projector is similar to a reflector, has environmental authority, really needs to talk about what it is that, and that's how they'll know how they think or feel or what's correct for them. That's their authority, more or less.
Yeah.
Mental authority, even though we say no in their authority. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I love this. I love your perspective that you're bringing, talking about your open root, and your root center is completely open. And that is one of the pressure centers. And so, and you're talking about, you know, maybe it was the status and everything. And I can just feel in that you probably wanted to feel free of the pressure of having to survive on your own, right?
Constantly, yes.
Would you say? That's probably a way the undefined root is feeling that vulnerability.
I was told that, and I believe this is 100% true, the centers that are the most open, they are white, and they also don't have any gates defined. Those are your biggest pain points, right? The biggest struggle. Like my nervous system that's connected to your adrenal glands and nervous system was shot that I thought that my husband's gonna walk through the door and my dog may bark. So
okay,
give me a second.
Sure. That's okay.
It's fine. She barked. Are we good? Okay.
We're good.
She
didn't
bark. Okay. So then my nervous system already, no matter what your root is, when you're with a narcissist, your nervous system is in fight or flight all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Constantly. So with that being said, that was even more pressure, like more pressure to do. I did think so many things that I regretted with the narcissist because I wanted to please him. And that's the other thing is when it's open, you're constantly pleasing. But when you realize that this is your biggest weakness, it's also then your superpower. Yes. If you then become aware of it and you're like, okay, like being able to shake things out somatically, like I feel things intensely in my body. If I have a conversation or I see a phone call from someone who seems to be a bit confrontational or I just like can't handle it, my gut drops. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, all of these things are connected to, of course, my sacral, but that root and the nervous system. So for me, finding ways to somatically cleanse out the stress, like I always have to make sure I go for a walk every day. I do yoga every day. Like there's these certain things that you just start to learn to put into your routine so that you can calm your nervous system down, or maybe it's your solar plexus, so you can relieve all of the emotions of that other person. And it's been a journey, and it is definitely a pressure point, always pleasing. And I think I remember saying that even to somebody recently in my life, and they're like, I just can't believe it. Like, I feel really bad that you felt like you always had a people please. And I'm like, I get that perspective, but that's also just part of my design. I had to learn to be able to not people please through that.
Mm. How can we see red flags about ourselves when we are people pleasing? If talk about green flags in others, red flags in ourselves.
Oh, I love that. It's a nice spin. Red flags in ourselves. I mean, like I said, that gut drop, if it's dropping, that means that you're about to do something that you don't want to engage in, right? Yeah. That's a red flag. That's something that's not serving you. If you're people pleasing, you are constantly, I think I have to pull from my book because
that'd be great.
And I literally just read this and I was like, wow. Okay. So something's telling us to
open
read this
because
you brought this up. And my first book, Embath and the Narcissist. Now, I didn't page mark it, so it's going to take me a minute to find it. It was before Conscious Parenting, and then it was on this page.
Awesome.
Okay. So the people pleasing, also what I was relating it to, was signs that you may have low self-esteem, which I definitely did as a child, which also relates to unhealed childhood trauma. And it doesn't have to be a major trauma. It can be just something stuck, right? Mm-hmm. So number one is people pleasing. That's a red flag where you're constantly doing things to serve others, right? You're putting others before yourself. Mm-hmm. You're doing, I remember my plate was full as a teenager, everything to serve everyone else. And I didn't even take a breath for myself.
Yeah.
That's the real shadow of the open root center with no gates. Your calendar is packed, but there's no me time in your calendar.
Yeah.
Number two is lack of setting and holding boundaries, right? So again, the calendar is full. You don't say no. Someone asks you to do something. You say, sure, yes. Saying no is really a painful thing for you. Mm. Harsh self-talk. You're always talking down. I used to always remember saying like, God, why'd you do that? That's so stupid. You're so stupid. And I remember used to saying it out loud all the time when I was younger. And then I had kids and I realized that what I do, like how I act, what I say, they're going to mimic. So I was like, I got to rewrite that out of my narrative real quick because yeah. I don't want them to grow up saying that about themselves. And then number four is a lack of integrity or a lack of unwavering values. You're with a narcissist, it didn't take much for him to convince me to do something I didn't want to do. Again, they train you to do that because they've either given you some type of punishment, like they've mm-hmm. removed love from you, given you the silent treatment, removed a gift, removed a vacation, or something like that. But still, you have to start to kind of not care about what they've given you or what they're taking away to really hold yourself and resolve like, no, you can punish me all you want. This doesn't feel right. I'm not going to do it.
Right.
And that's where that emotional strength comes in. And the last one is yearning for praise outside of yourself. That's definitely another red flag mm-hmm. of a people pleaser is like, that's also where the narcissist can really get you mm-hmm. is you're seeking for that love bombing again. You're seeking for that praise because they give you that intermittent reward of like, this is great. I love you. Let's go do this. When you don't please them, they remove it. Yeah. And so instead of being obsessed with getting that back, the green flag with a new partner is you have that no matter what. Like, no matter if you make a mistake, if you upset them, if you act out of a trauma response or acting out of your shadow, they're still going to accept you and love you. They're going to, you know, in the right time, call you out on it and you're going to have a really great conversation, but they're still going to love you.
And you can have a conversation. My husband and I, he has a defined route. I have an open route. And there was a work thing that didn't feel right for me, but he was like, oh, do you really want to not do a work thing? You know what I mean? Because, you know, we're both entrepreneurs and it's like, if someone gives you work, you should do work. And I'm like, no, honey, some invitations for you, my projector lovely, are bad invitations. But anyway, we're in that space. And I said to him, I need you to support me that, you know, this isn't right for me. And he was like, oh, absolutely. I support you. Even though he had feelings about it that he needed to process. Oh, I'm so happy. I'm so proud of myself, Raven, that I didn't just make his processing of emotions about my situation my problem. And he wasn't asking me to either. That's the green flag for this wonderful, but I have to take responsibility too, which is the wonderful thing about the paradox. If you're a victim, yes, you're a victim, but the beautiful thing is that you also are your own savior. And so you can save yourself. You can change your habits. You can become fortified. And that was a little, you know, green flag in myself realizing, hey, because someone else is having feelings and emotions, they're not always my work. Communication is my responsibility. And also my responsibility is to be in what is correct for me. And that's what the world is asking of me. That's what the universe is asking of me. You know, I have to share with you, I just made a meme the other day from you know, a client that I was coaching her. I was helping her to be able to say, honestly, it was like literally to be able to say, hey, boss, I'm sick today. That was all it was.
I hate calling in sick. Yeah. That is another thing.
Yeah, right?
I running them down.
I used to think, I hope they don't think I'm lying. I'm like, but what? Why? I'm not lying, though. I'm just
sick. And you have every right to lie if you need a personal day, like an emotional sick day too, right?
Right, but, right. Yeah. So but this download came after this, and I posted as a meme on my Instagram, holding others to a lower standard of compassion and integrity than you hold yourself is codependency, you know?
It is.
Because if you call in sick and they're like, how dare you call in sick? I mean, are they saying they've never been sick a day in their life? You know what I mean? Like, right. It's not possible. It's not, that would be out of integrity and discompassionate. And of course, this client did call in sick, turned off her phone, and they were completely compassionate. She has a lovely employer, even with lovely employers, you know, that kind of thing. Can, that kind of worry or people pleasing can sneak up on us.
It can sneak up.
Yeah.
I know. And it's something that you just have to train yourself to not take on that burden of like, oh, that person's going to think bad about me, or they're going to think that I'm lying or going into Disneyland. It's like, well, you could do all those things and you'd be perfectly fine. You deserve a sick day. We legally get those.
That's right. Totally. Well, what kind of services and how do people work with you? I mean, obviously your books, your beautiful books, which are just so great. Imagine those are kind of textbooks for some of the work that you're doing. So tell us how people can work with you and what it is that is available.
Yeah, right now I'm really focusing on the books for you to work on that. Of course, on the podcast, I'm now doing 6 days a week. You can see my generator really shining through there.
That's amazing.
Some are only 5 minutes, right?
That's
just a little snippet, like just to kind of keep you in the keeps you supported. I feel like, you know, when you're trying to decondition yourself and heal, you just need that little blip, like just a little pick me up during the day when you're coming from that. So yes, Empath and Narcissist podcast. And then my YouTube channel is Empath Rising with Raven Scott. So those are the best ways to kind of consume all of that information. And then I am doing reading. So I am kind of like a trauma-informed human design reading. So I'm there to spiritually mentor you and help you heal from narcissistic abuse while also looking at your chart, investigating, okay, where does this come from? Let's find it. Let's bring awareness to it. And let's either shield it up, guard it, or grow it.
Beautiful. So, how long have you been in your human design experiment, by the way? I didn't ask you that.
I know. I feel like I'm a newbie. I was listening to yours and I'm like, oh gosh, she's like been in this for so much longer.
Oh, really? It's funny. I feel new too.
Well, I was just talking to someone else who she's been in it for like 10 years and she's like, feels new. So I'm really a newbie. But yeah, let me think about this. 2020 is when I discovered my human design chart. Someone read it for me. Mm-hmm. And then I just dove right down into the rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's the way to go. Right. There's one of my clients and mentees, and I've been talking to her about her. She's a splenic projector. And I was like talking to her about her human design for a little bit. And she's like, now tell me again. And I was like, listen. She's also 2-4. I'm like, just go get into it. I'm just giving you homework. Get into it. And she's also Virgo. And she's like, okay, 2 weeks later, she was like an expert level. I mean, you know, there's always so much more, but yeah.
I know the 6-2, I feel like the twos, as much as the ones are investigators, the twos are almost like embodying that investigation. Like we just like are insatiable. With
what are you going to do while you're hermiting? You're going to read books. That's what a classic hermit is. That's like, you know, they're in their little house and they just have books and they have candles and snacks. I guess that's... What else are you going to do?
Yeah. Leave me alone. Leave me to my herbs and my books and I'm good to go.
Yeah. Well, let's see what else we have here before we sign off today. And we had Champagne here. Hi, Champagne. Today. Yes, this is today. She's asking if we're live. Yes, we're happening. That's an interesting question. Is this today? That's how I feel sometimes when I wake up.
What's happening today?
Live now. Hi, Carolyn. And hi, Tracy, too. So nice to see you all. And so this is, Michelle also says, dating a man who, we already looked at this one. Okay, yeah, blaming other people. Oh, this is one I wanted to look at. Michelle said, a cop had the authority thing going. Oh, gosh, and probably a little bit of bullying with that.
Yeah.
That's
perfect citizen on the outside and horrible inside.
Yeah. Well, your podcast is Empath and Narcissist, How to Heal with Human. Tell me exactly how it has human design in the title as well.
Yes, there is a spiritual healing with human design.
Perfect. Empath and Narcissist is so great.
Yes.
And we are planning for me to come on, and I want to just tease what I'm thinking about talking about is kind of like that, how, you know, reflectors, we see the big picture, because one of the questions I've been asking lately is, why is this a part, such a significant pain point for us as a collective at this time? And so like, and when and where does it happen so far as like the soul's trajectory? Like, where is it? Is it, can they heal from it? Can narcissists heal from it? Or is it something that's more like of an attachment that's kind of like higher in the dimensional, you know, landscape of the soul? These are all the questions I'm asking right now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to download them if you would like to talk about
it. And ask about like dark entities.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Because like I said,
I mean, I definitely am convinced that they're attached to them, but like that may be part of the healing, like, and, or maybe are, yeah, I don't know. It's such a dense field here on earth.
Yeah.
That dark entities just exist.
It's true.
So therefore, will there always be narcissists? Can we ever get rid of it? But I love that it's being more and more pulled out into the awareness. Like when I was with my ex, I had no idea what narcissist was. Mm-hmm. I actually had no idea what emotional abuse was. Like I personally did not see that or experience it. So I didn't have a construct mm-hmm. of what that was. And he was my first everything. So that like that just was kind of is what it was. And it was very covert, mm-hmm. but yet also very malignant.
Yeah.
If that can be a combination.
It is.
Malignant.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. And so, but I didn't realize what any of that was until years later. And I was like, oh yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Checks off all the boxes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think all of the different styles, there's also like communal and you know what I mean? Communal narcissist is someone who like really derives a lot of that ego gratification by being elevated in a community. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. they do good works, but they really do good works just for ego satisfaction and rather than, you know,
like a say, cop.
Like a cop, right? You know who's a really great model, I think, of a communal narcissist? If you ever watched Everybody Loves Raymond, did you ever watch that show?
Oh, yes.
The mom, the mother-in-law. The mom, Marie, because
oh,
she, yeah, everybody loves my muffins, you know, Deborah, no one likes yours. They all love mine. You know what I mean? And like, she's uh-huh. doing things with the community to abuse and like uses it as an abuse tactic to her daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
Why there are a lot of mother-in-laws who are
there are because there just are. I know. It's like the old, I don't know if it's a meme or whatever, right? Taylor's oldest time is the mother-in-law is always like the bane of everyone's existence, but yes. Maybe it's because it's just the narcissistic mother-in-laws are the ones who gave all the mother-in-laws a bad rap.
Totally.
Oh my God. I do feel like they do isolate in a weird way. Like they isolate someone like the wife without isolating them from the circle. They're just like, oh, I'm better than you and you're not really part of this. But you're here, so we're putting up with you. Kind of a like isolation, a social isolation.
Icky. One last thing I want to mention too to those who are listening is that narcissism also cycles, you know. So if you're in a relationship, then they'll be really chill. And actually, a lot of them are quite brilliant.
Yeah.
Have a lot of great qualities also.
Yeah.
Just sometimes we have to be plain and then sometimes the relationship is going well and it might be during a love bombing phase. And so there'll be a cycling where things are going well and then it cycles back through a bad period. Just I think stand back and is the person that you're in this relationship with willing to at least sometimes use narcissistic tactics to abuse you? That's something to recognize. And if you think it'll get better, that's not the place to be. I don't want to say that there's anyone who can't get better, but I want to say that you don't have to tolerate another cycle hoping it'll get better. Would you add to that?
Yeah. I mean, the average attempts to leave, I think it's 8. I've also heard 12. So don't feel bad if it's more than 8 to leave. And it took me on the 8th time to finally leave. And there's also this thing where there's an energetic trauma bond where, you know, sometimes they're nice to you and they'll text you and what we call it, hoover you back in or suck you back in with that loving, charming, you know, talent that they have. And sometimes if that trauma bond's strong enough, depending on your childhood, the silent treatment will make you hoover yourself back in.
Yeah.
Like I felt like there was a piece of me missing because there wasn't energetic heart cord connected. Mm-hmm. And so so don't feel bad if you know, or don't feel stupid or anything like that if it takes you multiple times.
Yeah.
And eventually they will show their true colors. And when you're done, you'll be done. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it was, I moved out because he hit me in the end. And I was like, well, nope, there's my line. And so then I moved out, but I wasn't planning on divorcing. I was like, we're going to work on our relationship. Like, that's me devoted till the end.
Yeah.
But then he showed his true colors, and he showed me that he's willing to cheat on me by trying to cheat on someone else. And it just was like too many lines to cross for me. Okay, I'm done. So when you're done, you'll be done.
And keep going when you're done, mm-hmm. like just keep going, because there will be a lot of attempts. When I left the one in my 20s, the strategy that this person used was, I'm hearing voices, and the only way that I ever feel like I might not hurt myself is if you're around. And I was like, I'm going to say something a little direct. I was like, genuinely don't care if you stop living. I mean, I'm sorry, but I was like, but I also don't want someone to die on my watch. I don't need to relieve this relationship, and, you know, with you doing something that, you know what I mean, or attempting to, because that's not something anyone wants to live with. But I had to do the thing they call gray rocking, where you creep out little by little, you start to pull your energy back little by little. When I decided, when I was done, I was done. But I still, it was like, it takes a little time to pull out, because any real conversations only get you abused. That's what is going on there.
It's true. Even if they call it an adult conversation, it's still just not.
You come away being a bad person somehow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, Raven, I could talk to you all day, and I promise that I won't. So I'm going to say thank you, thank you, thank you so much for all of the work you're doing on our beautiful world, for helping the nine-centered being to understand who she truly is, for helping the empath to know who she is and what her strength is, because sensitivity is a superpower and a strength. It is not a weakness. Vulnerability is beautiful, and we need to redeem it so that it isn't consumed and fed on by toxic or narcissistic or abusing people.
Yes.
And you're just, and all of the work that you're doing, what a prolific offering of doing 6 days a week something to support people and your podcast. So thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And thank you for having me here.
I look forward to talking on your podcast and some other time
soon. I'm excited for it.
Well, everyone, this is Raven Scott. Be sure to get her books, listen to her podcast. I'm going to say goodbye to everyone. Raven, I forgot to tell you, if you want to hang out a minute afterward, I'm just going to say goodbye and play my exit music. I usually tell people in advance, so you're getting a little production, because I forgot to actually, I'm telling the audience, you're getting a little production because I got to do the pre-production part of it. I'm in the conversation with Raven. So I'll talk to you in just a moment, and hopefully again real soon. And everyone, thank you all so much for coming to the live episode. Thank you for listening to the podcast. I want to let you know that I do have an empath course that is available to you right now very affordably. And so you could go to my website, trishacarcharm.com/empath. It's very affordable. It's available now. And I'm building a community from it. We meet about once per month, and it's deeply healing and beautiful. So definitely check out all of the links in the description, because you'll find all of Raven's invitations and find the way to be able to, you know, buy her books and find out more about how she is shining her light on this beautiful world. And I want you to keep shining your light on our beautiful world. Thanks for tuning in. I love you, whoever you are.